This Fab FM Voice of the Douglas Shire podcast is proudly brought to you by Bendigo Bank, Port Douglas and Mosman, offering a full range of competitive banking products and technology you'd expect from a big bank with the personal service and care you'd expect from us. Drop into your nearest branch at Port Village Shopping Centre or Front Street Mosman. Bendigo Bank, the better big bank.
With our collective vision, we're going to have an ongoing fight between development and infrastructure and urbanisation versus conservation and restoration. If you don't have a vision, that will just go on forever. And people involved in planning know that, and that's why the people around the Daintree Joint Management Group support it, and they all agree. The Daintree Sustainability Group, and by the way, we're not an advisory group to council, we're just another advocacy group like lots of other advocacy groups around here. It'd be nice, we'd probably love it if council took more notice of us than they do, but they have other issues to deal with, and rather than throw rocks at them, we think we'd do better off trying to work with them. So the Douglas Shire Sustainability Strategy has proposed that we have an ongoing voluntary purchase of land focused on those conservation zones. And the latest initiative about the reef, I congratulate council for doing this. It's a tragedy that Qantas has been lost. But the project is fantastic because what you can do here is use carbon offsets from people who offset their footprint, and there are businesses in the Shire who already claim to be carbon neutral through a mix of reducing their emissions and offsetting the balance, standard thing. And green, of course, has become the economic foundation of the Shire. It's what people want. They want pristine environments, and consumers want clean, green food. And if we are to have an economic future in this place, well, not the Gold Coast, but in this place, that's the way we need to go. Now, we prepared two papers which have been condemned widely by some people. There's the electricity supply paper, and when power is supplied to communities all across Queensland, people pay for it themselves. Unless someone comes up with a bucket of money and pays for it, it's generally user pays. That's how it works. What we've done is said, look, if you can get a conservation outcome, and we've suggested a few ideas, we think that's a justification to improve people's power systems. And we are the people that have suggested the microgrid for Cape Tribulation. It's not in the state government report. The DSSG has been very constructive, and I think our report aligns very much with the assessment the state government's done, and time will tell which one's going to fly, whether it's the state government macrogrid or the federal government's macro grid, or the state government's assessment. And I'm not here to talk about power. That's probably a separate subject. And the 30-year conservation strategy was, as I mentioned before, was input into the Daintree Joint Management Group. Now, the fact that you haven't gone out to the whole community and said, do you want one or not? Everything these days that you do, whether you build a road, whether you plan urban communities, whether you build a hospital or an old people's home, they need a plan. You need to think about what your objectives are, about what your vision is and where you want to go. So rather than throw rocks at each other, why don't we try and work on some sort of shared vision for what these places are? And both of these papers have been put out. We've sent them to the stakeholder groups we think are interested. We've asked for their comments. If they don't like it, put up your own. If you've got comments on it, give them to DSSG, or better still, give them to council. But both papers, in our view, they're realistic, they're practical, they're not coercive, they don't involve any other regulation. They're a vision statement, an objective of where we'd like to go. And if someone's got a different idea, well, let's hear it. But no one has taken the trouble to put that on paper. And they are designed to ensure conservation, residential, cultural and business needs are all accommodated. And I'd really encourage people to read those documents. And if you don't like them, say so. If you do like them, say so. If you've got something constructive to say, do it. But don't just say throw rocks at them and say they're a load of crap. Because until someone else comes up with some idea, until someone comes up with a vision, we have none at all. And if you don't have the vision, you've got an ongoing recipe for conflict, which is what you're seeing in this room now. People want to hand their blocks to their kids. They don't want to sell them. But when they one day do come up for sale, so it might take 50 or 100 years to get there. Where there's land within the conservation zone or large blocks that can be rehabilitated, our suggestion was that as they come on the market, voluntary conservation funds purchase them and either put them into a conservation zone or into a national park. But we saw it as a land use plan we thought that you have to start with a land use plan, and from there the other things sort of fall into place. 20 to 50 to 100 more blocks to buy. We would argue a few large blocks get rehabilitated. We would argue that the rest of those blocks in those conservation zones get bought out as they become available, not before, nothing coercive, not saying you take people's land off them. It doesn't change the population very much. Most blocks stay there.
Okay, Paul Macon, Family FM. I just wanted to ask you, Mike, are you for the solar hydrogen grid? If not, what's the alternative as far as you're concerned?
That's a complex question, and I'm quite happy to answer if you're prepared to give me a few minutes, but I'll have a go at it. We put forward, when the Sunverge report came out, it proposed a gas-fired power station and a grid to every property over there. And that was prepared by Sunverge, that was funded by ARENA, the Australian Renewable Energy Agency, to do that plan. It had five options, and it recommended option one, which was that one. We put in a submission to that and said we actually think option five is a better one, which is upgrade the existing standalone plants, of which just about everyone's got one, and put in some microgrids where they're going to work. So that was our suggestion. We feel, I guess, exonerated that when the state government did their assessment, it came up with pretty much the same answer, because the Sunverge report said $65 million to put it in. That wasn't the hydrogen plant, that was a gas plant. A hydrogen plant might add another $20 or $30 million, and you've got about 450 customers. We don't think any government's going to come up with that level of subsidy for that number, because people all over the state, I can say, well, what about me? We want a subsidy for our power too. Not only that, but we think there's a lot of people over there, maybe 50%, who have standalone systems. They're quite happy with them. They don't want to hook up to the grid and start paying bills. They're good the way they are.
The Sunverge with the generators.
Sure, and I was been one of them till I recently moved, and I rarely use my generator. And my solar panels supply me most of the time. I'm CAFER with my power. And
you mightn't use a generator, but a lot of people over there do use generators.
Sure. And I might point out that the amount of diesel and petrol that's used in generators is yes, it's an issue, and would all like to get rid of it, but it's a fraction of the amount of diesel and petrol that gets used by all the tourists and residents that drive up there. And so let's just get things in perspective here about diesel and petrol use. Yes, it's an issue, but the issue there is not climate change is an issue, but the big issue for Daintree is the biodiversity, those conservation values. And so we would say absolutely we want to reduce that, and we would say that if you want to reduce it, we think the best way is to beef up everybody's standalone systems, because solar panels have become relatively cheap. And so if you want to get by in cloudy conditions, just put up twice as many, and you'll get enough power even in cloudy conditions to not need your generators. So we put a lot of thought into that. Sorry, it's a very superficial answer, but I'd be more than happy to. It's a debate on its own.
And replying to that, Daintree Renewable Energy President Russell O'Doherty.
This was evaluated by the Board of ARENA, members of ARENA, members of DNRME, who the Daintree Power Committee have been working with for over 2 years. We have had, I don't know, a dozen Skype link-ups and WebEx link-ups with those two entities, with Sunverge, with Richard Sharman from Vault Advisory. They employ some of the leading experts in microgrid technology and renewable energy technology. And at this stage, our proposal that's been put to the Board of ARENA and been accepted is, and the consensus, actually I'll go back a bit, the consensus of the five different options put by Sunverge was that the renewable energy microgrid is the best way to move forward. It is the best for the community and is the best outcome for the environment. Out of that, we were contacted by a company from the UK called ITM, who've developed cutting-edge hydrogen cell technology. They develop hydrogen on-site. The report that KPMG was put out is so flawed, their figures are so wrong, they didn't factor any load usage from any businesses north of the river. We have done all that research. We have people, Sean Cross, who is one of the world's leading microgrid designers and engineers. He's just come back from Japan, where he's developed a renewable energy microgrid over there. So our proposal ticks all the boxes. We are passionate about the Daintree, and we have a vision. We have a vision to get rid of every generator out of the Daintree. More solar panels is not going to do it. Mike says that our proposal isn't green. The only byproduct is water. We don't use any fossil fuels whatsoever, so you've got hot water comes out the other end, which can be recycled. And I think it's about time people understand it, the facts, and not the misrepresentation. The figures that were put out by KPMG, they didn't factor in any the contribution from the federal government, which is substantial. ARENA invests up to 50% of renewable energy projects. We've got private investment. So this whole notion that it's going to cost ratepayers or property owners thousands of dollars is absolute rubbish. We will provide power to the front gate, and the property owner can hook up the, from there, get it to their meter box, their house, and that is the only cost that they will incur, and they will pay exactly the same price, cent per kilowatt, as everyone else. And the beauty of our system is we've all got solar over there. We have built into the network that we can feed excess solar into the microgrid to complement a large-scale solar farm. They get credits for the power they provide, the same as everyone else in the state does. So it's a win-win. It's a win for the environment because we get rid of every generator out of the Daintree, and it's a win for people over there where they have a reliable, affordable type of power. So, and I think I wanted to dispel all the myths and the crap that's been spread around. So thank you very much.